Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
Every year, 47,000 people in the United States lose their lives to suicide. And for each of those deaths, it's estimated that 6 to 32 close family members and friends are forced to cope with the loss and to search for answers.
Our guest on this episode, Laura Trujillo, knows what it's like to be a grieving and confused loved one in the aftermath of suicide. She writes about it in her new book, Stepping Back from the Ledge, A Daughter's Search for Truth and Renewal. Laura, we thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'm really grateful to get to talk to both of you.
You are a longtime journalist. You're the managing editor for Life and Entertainment at USA Today. It must have been very painful for you to write this book, even though you are a writer. So tell us more about why you decided to do it.
Yeah, I'm not sure I thought it all the way through at the beginning, maybe is the honest part, but I did, but you know, it's really difficult to write about, but part of me thought, you know, you have two options. One is to write about it and hope that you can connect with people, which I think as a journalist, you kind of spend your entire career believing in for real. Like if people tell their stories, you can create empathy and connect people. And when it came time for my own story, I mean, part of me felt obligated to tell it in some ways because I do really believe that, but it also felt really important to me. And in part because I guess I know the, what can happen when you don't talk about depression or mental health issues or suicide. And one thing that my mom said in one of her notes, she wrote a couple notes to her family, was that she said she was too proud to seek help. And I don't know exactly what, you know, she meant by that, but obviously that she didn't want to talk to people. She didn't want to tell people she wasn't okay. And I guess I think that if you don't talk about it, that's kind of the extreme risk that could happen. And so it felt important that I at least try to.
You write something that I think is so scary and so powerful. And I think it has a lot to do with what you just said about how your mom was kind of too proud to seek help. And it seems like, and I think this is so right, you write that I have learned that when some people decide to kill themselves, they seem more at ease than they have in a long time because they know that if they show any suicidal signs or too much distress, others might try to talk them out of it. So that's kind of, it makes me feel a little hopeless. I mean, how can we tell if somebody who's close to us is in that much pain? What have you learned about ways to discover whether or not somebody is suicidal if we really can't trust when they seem to be getting things back together?
I don't know if I have. I mean, I wish I had. I feel like if I had, you know, psychologists would be like, oh, let me talk to you because you know something special. But yeah. I think it's just almost like a reminder to check in on people regardless of how they seem. And especially, you know, the past couple of years have really just stunk for a lot of us and been rough, whether, you know, you've been privileged and had a pretty decent time during it or if you've lost someone. And so I think it just reminded me that no matter how people seem, it's just good to check in on people. And if, you know, they're honest with you, which I hope more people feel comfortable talking about, that you can be helpful. But it is a scary thing to ask for help. I mean, I wrote in the book a little bit, like I was afraid to tell my therapist. So like, you shouldn't be lying to your therapist. I mean, it's probably a given, but I was really afraid to tell her when I did feel suicidal. I thought, well, what's that? What's going to happen? Is that going to, am I going to be put somewhere, you know, will I be allowed to be around my kids? Like I didn't know. So I was afraid, which really I shouldn't have been, but you know, when you're in that state of mind, I don't think you think things through very clearly.
And so So how did you finally decide to open up to your therapist and say, hey, this, my mother's suicide is really impacting me and I'm feeling guilt and all of the kinds of things that people often feel in the aftermath of a suicide?
I don't know exactly what the answer is to that. I'd obviously been going to therapy for a while after my mom died. I was on I had a smart doctor who put me on an antidepressant, which was obviously helpful. So I kind of think it was probably a combination of medicine, time, and maybe just me being so tired of feeling so terrible and hopeless that I did say it. And it was so different than what I expected in that she just was like, okay, well, tell me more. Like, let's talk about this. And I guess I was surprised that that's really what happened. And I think people are really afraid to talk about it. People are to ask, if you think someone's depressed, like if I ask them questions, will that make them feel worse? Will that, you know, am I crying where I shouldn't cry? And I think there's a way to just ask people how they're doing and just remind them or even just with texts of like, hey, how are you doing? Or thinking about you and just stuff like that, that doesn't necessarily always get a response, but also has an impact. And I think about that a lot with like why I'm still here. And I think, you know, obviously medicine, therapy, probably a little bit of luck and friends who checked in and probably had no idea the impact that they had. And so I just think that's really important. And I know it doesn't sound very profound or helpful, like, hey, check in on people. But at its core, I think that's what we need to do with people.
It must have been really hard for you too, because when you would explain what happened to your mother, I know you said that you kind of struggled with the wording for it. And instead of saying that she had died, you actually told people she committed suicide, which that just is uncomfortable. And like we said off the air, my grandmother actually committed suicide, but I never tell people, I mean, I guess I am now, but I never do tell people that because it makes them uncomfortable and
yes.
They can't really help you because they're like trying to change the subject.
Yeah. And I do find that. And you know, when my mom died, I wrote her obituary and I didn't put the reason she died in it. And honestly, at the time, like, I don't think that was a conscious decision. It could have been subconscious that I didn't put it in. And I wish I would have, you know, obviously in hindsight, I didn't have an editor on an obit, but you know, you think about it later and I wish I could have put that in there. I didn't think about it at the moment. I'm sure I just had a lot of things going on, but I do think it's important if you feel comfortable saying it to say it, because it is common and you do get two reactions, or I get two reactions, which is one, if I say my mom died by suicide, sometimes people just kind of are quiet and want to back out of the conversation. I think that's true with a lot of things, whether it's suicide or just something that makes people uncomfortable, or I say that she killed herself and it sparks a conversation. Someone will tell me about someone there's a connection there. And I will say most of the time people seem to appreciate kind of like the opening conversation to have it, that I'm the one who's either, some people say brave, I'm like, or dumb enough to just say it and say, hey, this is, you know, how she died. It's okay. It's not shameful. It's what happened. And it took me a little while to do that. And sometimes, I'll be honest, I don't always say it. Like if I'm in a conversation with someone and they ask about my mom and I just want to get out of the conversation as quickly as I can, I may just say he died. And it's not like everyone wants to know, you know, the whole story, since there's so many reasons behind what, you know, how people die. But I think most of the time I try to say it because I think it's an opportunity to be helpful. And I don't have like a lot of other skills to be helpful. I'm not going to work a suicide hotline. Like I would be terrible at that. I appreciate that people do. So I think, okay, well, what I can do is talk about it and tell my mom's story. And hopefully that is helpful to someone.
And tell us your mom's story. Tell us what happened.
So my mom is, first of all, fantastic. She's my mom. So of course I'm a little biased, but she was really wonderful. She was like the best grandma anyone, I know everyone probably thinks this, but could ask for. She was really close with my four kids. And I loved that. She had been a nurse a long time and she was an administrator in a hospital and she was retired. And she seemed to be really great to me, the way I was looking at it. being around her. She seemed happy. She had a really great group of friends. And I knew some things had been hard for my mom. Her husband had been very sick and she'd been taking care of him. And I think that was rough. And I knew she wasn't sleeping that great, but I'll be honest, like I had four pretty young kids and I worked full time and I wasn't paying attention to her probably the way I should have. And my sister knew some things and my mom's sister knew some things and my mom's mother knew some things, but like none of us, I think, had a conversation with all the things we knew about our, well, my mom or, you know, her sister to really put it together. And in April of 2012, so almost exactly 10 years ago, my mom won night or early morning drove. She lived in Phoenix. So she drove up to the Grand Canyon, which is about a 3.5 hour drive, 3 hour drive. And she wrote some notes, we think there from what we found out. And she took the shuttle bus to an overlook and she jumped in and she died. And they found her later that day. And I guess I've spent a really long time trying to figure out why and how she could do this. And in part of it, I think you discover that you don't know everything about people. You certainly don't know everything about your mother. And, you know, her life was different than maybe I saw it. I didn't see all facets of it. And I think that's pretty common just, you know, with any relationship you have, but maybe especially with your mother.
Did you learn anything from those notes? Did they provide you with any sense of closure?
You know, it's funny because everyone, when I said my mom killed herself, one of the first questions people ask is, did she leave a note? Like the note was going to be like, oh, here's exactly why I did this. Because I do think we tend to have that feeling. And I had that feeling because I did ask my sister who lived in Arizona. I was like, did mom leave a note? Like, it was going to be the clue to everything, the way like a lab report would tell you if you have cancer or a disease. Like I thought it was going to be this map in some way of why she did this. And then I think, well, she probably wrote it, we think, you know, right before she did it. So probably she wasn't in the greatest frame of mind. I didn't find it to be helpful or really a lot of closure to be perfectly clear on that. You know, she wrote nice things, but she said that she'd been too proud. She also typed, she left a text that she sent to my sister, which actually didn't arrive until after my mom had died just because of the connection at the canyon, but that she asked us to all forgive her. And that felt really hard to see. So I wouldn't say that the notes were really helpful. I did a lot of time just trying to learn more about my mom. And there were a lot of things I didn't know about her. I learned in pieces that she had suffered from depression and mental health issues in the past. And they were things I didn't really understand or I guess notice as a kid. I always thought I was super observant, but apparently I wasn't. And so it was interesting to kind of see that she had suffered with depression throughout most of her life. And when things were stressful, it got worse, which makes sense. So I found out some of those types of things. And I would say that helped in some way for me to understand my mom. And she had a lot of people who loved her and she couldn't see that she had at least a dozen people who would have helped her at any moment, but she couldn't see that anymore. And I think that's pretty common when people kill themselves. There's the inability for them to see how much they mean to people and who would help them if they wanted it, not if they wanted it, but I guess if they could ask for it.
How did it impact you as a daughter in the days and the months and the years afterward, as you've struggled to figure out why she did this?
I mean, obviously the loss of your mom, no matter how they die, is really hard. And no matter what age you lose your mom, whether you're a kid or you know, your mom is at the age where it's kind of not expected, but just happens. I think it's really impossible. And it feels to me, I feel very unmoored without my mom, which I know is kind of silly because I'm an adult. I have like my own kids, but I think that was really hard. And I think with suicide, you always have guilt and you think, could I have done something different? Could I have recognized something? Could I have, did anything I do contribute to it? And there's been a lot of guilt, which I think guilt plus grief is a really cruddy combination. Not that either of those are great, but when you combine them, it's been pretty tough. And so I think I've had a particularly hard time with that. And I guess trying to learn everything I could about my mom for me was helpful, in part maybe because I've been a reporter, I've been an editor, and I thought if I can learn everything, maybe I could understand just why and how she did this.
We love having you as part of our Nobody Told Me family of listeners. We know a lot of you want to be your own boss or already operate your own business. That's why we want you to know about Shopify. With Shopify, you'll create an online store in your vibe, discover new customers, and grow the following that keeps them coming back.
Hear that? That's the sound of another sale on Shopify. And the moment another business dream becomes reality, Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that's revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle.
Shopify puts you in control of every sale channel. So whether you're selling satin sheets from Shopify's in-person POS system, or offering organic olive oil on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you're covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers.
Once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere.
What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 170 countries.
Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nobody, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/nobody to take your business to the next level today.
Shopify.com/nobody.
I know that you also went back and thought about your own relationship with your mom and how certain events had impacted your bond. I thought it was very interesting how you talked about sexual abuse and how that had a huge impact on your relationship with your mom. Talk to us about how and why that changed things for you guys. And it was almost an insurmountable challenge for you to overcome because some or a lot of blame went to her for what happened to you.
Yeah. So in the book I write about, my parents divorced when I was a kid and my mom remarried when I was a teenager, and she was really happy and it was great to see my mom happy. She hadn't been happy in a long time. And shortly after we had moved in with her then boyfriend, he began sexually abusing me. And I was a teenager and it was the 80s and I didn't understand that I should have told someone. I kind of blamed myself. I didn't want to tell my mom because my mom was so happy. And I just felt like she hadn't been happy in so long. And I think like with many abusers, he was really great to my mom. He was wonderful. I think my mom kind of changed when she met him. She became more adventurous. She became more brave. She learned to ski. She learned, you know, to kayak, to sail, to, windsurf, like to just do all these things. And I didn't want to make her unhappy. I also was afraid, will anyone believe me? And so I didn't tell her. And I did not tell her until I was an adult with my own kids and was kind of having some problems and that was one of the things that when I talked to the psychiatrist came out, and after many sessions, they felt, and I think I felt, that it was important to talk to my mom about it, because I think there was something between us, which was something being kept from my mom. And anytime you have that, I think that just, you can't be as close as you are. And so I had told my mom about that. And that was obviously really hard for my mom to hear, because it's someone she loved and thought was wonderful. And I think that's really hard to just reconcile in your brain. And it was hard for my mom and I after that. And my mom, I told my mom, like, we talked about this. I was like, because my mom said she felt guilty. And I was like, you shouldn't, because you didn't do anything. Like, you don't need to be forgiven. Like, because she kept saying she was sorry. And I kept saying, I don't have to forgive you because you didn't do this. And that was really hard between us. And I think I didn't know that my mom had been so depressed at the time, or that things had been that hard taking care of her husband. And I don't think I realized how difficult telling her that was until after she was gone. And then I did hear from my sister that that had obviously been really difficult on my mother. My mom's sister and her mother, so my aunt and my grandmother, were really mad at me for telling my mom that. They thought she wasn't in a state to hear it, and basically blamed me for my mom's death. And that is obviously still really difficult. But I think in trying to understand my mom better, I guess I've realized, okay, well, I don't want to say what role I played, but what we all can do to be helpful and not, I don't know. That wasn't a super helpful answer, I know.
No, I think it's very helpful, because you know what? It gets to the heart of this, that there's pain on a lot of different sides when someone commits suicide. And I think it gets to the heart of it, that there isn't an easy answer. It's not like you said, like getting lab tests back, you know, from blood work. And it's very, it was this one thing. And this is what we do to fix it. And we take one pill and boy, you know, you'll be better tomorrow. So, I mean, I think that gets to the heart of it.
How many stories do we hear about people who they end up having just something else completely unrelated to their family and friends, you know, even a second life that people don't know about. And that's what caused it, or some other event that, you know, really they could never blame themselves for. And that's like, it's just so frustrating.
And just like a mixture of things. And I don't know if there's ever just like one thing you can point to. It's obviously many different things and some mental health challenges that make those things more difficult. And it's also hard because I know, you know, when you lose someone, everyone grieves differently, and you can't judge someone who immediately has blame, because I think, well, my grandma lost her daughter, and, you know, I have a daughter, and I can't imagine what that would feel like. Like, I can know my pain. I can know here's how hard it was to lose my mom, but I don't know how it was for her to lose her daughter. And I like to think that everybody does the best they can, like with what they know at the time, that we all have the best intentions, and that is what they believed. And I think that that's a really hard thing. And when someone dies by suicide, particularly, I think you start learning things that you didn't know. And some people want to talk about it, and some people don't want to talk about it. In our family, some people were like, I don't want to talk about it at all. Some people talked a little bit about it. And so it's really a complicated thing. And you do learn pieces. I mean, even since I've written the book, my sister and I have become closer, and we were actually at breakfast the other day, and we were talking about, I stayed at my dad's house, and my dad lives in the same house I lived in growing up. And I realized when I was in the shower, there's this little window above the shower. And I spent a lot of my life trying to think about how to get out that window, which is kind of weird. And then I realized I would not fit out of it now, I'll just say, maybe as a kid. But I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get out of the house, like which locks did I need to do? Or there were bars on the back windows. And my sister was like, that's interesting, because I spent a lot of my childhood like hiding matches and candles and anything, because my mom had tried to burn the house down once when we were kids. And the fire ended up being put out in the bathroom. But like from that, I guess I became, my sister became fight and she was going to stop my mom. And I obviously became flight and was trying to leave. And I was like, that's really interesting, because in some ways I see that how our life has been, that I guess I run when things are really bad or I want to just escape. And it was just a weird thing that my sister and I never really talked about that fire. Like it happened and then it was put out and we just all pretended like it never happened, which now saying that sounds completely insane. Like, oh, okay, we'll just pretend that never happened. But that was sort of how I grew up. Like something happened and you weren't to ask questions and you didn't probe. And part of it was the time. Like, I don't think in the 70s and 80s, people talked about mental health issues. It was like, okay, well, that's done and we'll move on. And then later, you know, when my sister and I were having breakfast, I was like, oh, okay, well, I see how it affected us. Like I was always trying to figure out how to get away. And you were always trying to figure out how to stop mom from doing something. And clearly, you know, it wasn't just a fire. It was, you know, other things that she did, but I don't know. It struck me as really strange that I had never realized that until so many years later, that that's how some of the things my mom did affected us.
How important is it to keep moving forward in the aftermath of someone's suicide, to pet the dog, to look at the trees, to be with a friend or a family member, even these small things that maybe seem monumental at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's almost all you can do. Like someone talked, like it's, you're not moving on, you're just moving forward or through. And I think that, I mean, when I think of the best parts of life, they're just like small moments. They really are kind of petting the dog and hearing my kids talk in the background or something like that. And I think as you do them, it helps. And obviously therapy helps and medicine helps. So I don't think I could have like pet my dog out of this, although I tried. Poor Stella and Viola.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. My dogs are like, okay, enough of the emotional support. But I do think it's like little things and it does help. And I'm sure a scientist could explain it and how it rewires your brain or whatever. And for me, I guess getting out of it meant thinking about like what is it for me that I know I'm healthy when I'm doing? So like I have a checklist in my underwear drawer of like things that if I'm not feeling great, I look at the list and it's like a list of questions for me, which shows like what's a healthy time. So one of it is like, you know, are you with nature? Like, did you go outside and put your feet like in the actual grass, like on the ground and feel that? Or did you talk to someone today, like compliment someone or have a conversation with someone, like things that for me make me feel better about the world? Did you write something? Because even though I say I hate writing, I guess I like it a little bit. So, you know, it's just like those types of things. And so I think with everyone, you have to think about what are the things in your life that make you feel, I don't want to say good or alive because that sounds really weird, but just what is a healthy state for you? And are you doing those things? And if you're not, what should you do? And the end of my list is like, okay, well, do all these things. And if you still don't feel better, you should call your therapist and, you know, get back on like a little maintenance schedule. And also to keep taking my medicine, because maybe like other people, you take medicine and then you feel good. And about every 18 months, I'm like, I don't need this anymore. I'm fine. And I'm like, okay, I'm not fine. I'm fine because I'm taking my medicine. So it's just like, for me, I need that checklist and that helps. And some of those little things are just, I guess, what got me through and what continued to just, I guess, make me a happy person or an alive person. You know, some days the bar is low.
Yeah. Well, I think it was really interesting how you talk about that before your mom died, you taught her how to use Instagram. And that you have these kind of messages from her that all end with love you on there. You described it as kind of like a journal between the two of you. And we're so used to hearing people on this show talk about how bad social media is, but gosh, what an unexpected gift in her sake. And I'm sure for a lot of people who have lost people to suicide or to any way, to have them kind of memorialized through their Facebooks, their Instagrams and everything. How has that impacted you to be able to kind of look back and think about her making a comment on something that was going on in your life at that moment?
It's obviously really great. I feel very lucky to have that. And I think it again gets back to, it's those small moments of life that actually matter versus like you think it's the big thing, the weddings and the big parties that you very much stress over. But Lucy's my youngest. And when she was 4 or 5, it was right shortly before my mom died, she had a ballet recital and my mom had an iPhone, which was pretty new. And so she thought she was taking a picture, but she was recording. And it must have gone on for like 4 minutes. And it's just this conversation that we're all having after Lucy's ballet recital about where we should go to lunch and how she did. And so her brothers are in it. And you can kind of see my mom and then you can see the sidewalk, you know, like all these things that when she didn't know it was recording. And it's just the best gift to have. Like because I've never was someone who took videos or did a lot of that stuff. And I just love having a very normal conversation about, in essence, where we ended up eating pizza, but it makes me really happy to have that. And I think with, you know, I know there's a lot of bad things about social media that have been proven by people who study it and are way smarter than I am. I will say, I think for me, it had been very useful when my mom died. I started, well, it's kind of a joke in the family because I posted pictures and I would write a caption and then the caption would be, you know, like 7 paragraphs long. I would start writing about my mom and her death. And that's almost how the book started in a way, is that people would write back to me, usually in a private message, and tell me about someone they lost to suicide. And I realized, you know, as we were talking about the number of people who have, and the fact that some of these people I was very close with, and I did not know that about them. And it was interesting that just me sharing my story, like, created the space for them to share theirs. And so I did it. I mean, I wasn't doing it like, oh, I want people to talk to me about it. But I think I just kept sharing stories of my mom. And every time I did, it was either on Facebook or Instagram, someone would message about their family. And maybe that encouraged me, or maybe it just made me see, like, this is how I could be useful. Because my mom used to always say, like, be kind and be useful. And I was like, well, I hope I'm doing both. I could be useful here. But that was always her advice to my sister and me. And so I guess through writing, I thought maybe that's my way to be kind and useful.
You know, Laura, our show is called Nobody Told Me. And we always ask people, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what is it that nobody told you about life and death and suicide and your relationship with your mom, all those kinds of things that you really had to learn the hard way, but you'd like to pass on to others so that you might save them from learning it the hard way?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing I've just learned with all of this is it's okay to ask for help and it's okay to reach out to people. And not in a way that's being invasive or, you know, overstepping bounds, but sometimes it's just sending someone a picture that made me think of them, and just connecting in that way, because I think we forget that that's what we need. It doesn't have to be a phone call. If you're a phone call person, that's great. For me, it's usually a text with a picture because then I can write less, but sometimes I write a lot. But I think it's just that. I think for some time, I forget the value of that connection, and that's really all, you know, we have in the end is our connection to people. And I don't know if that's very helpful, but I think with my mom, it was just understanding and putting it out there and reminding, even if they don't want help, not saying like, do you need help? But continuing to put offers out there, even if they don't want it, or even if they don't reply, that me asking my mom to go to lunch, even if she didn't say yes, was okay. And I could ask her again without being pesty. And I think that's true with people, so that they stay connected and that they feel that there are people they can talk to. And then obviously it's also helping with mental health care, because I think it's really impossible to navigate, and especially when you're not feeling great. So if you can help someone who wants help there, that's great. I don't know. I wish I was more helpful with what I should be more eloquent with what I've learned.
No, you, no, I think you're perfect.
I think that's extremely helpful. How can people connect with you and learn more about the book and everything you're doing, which is making such a big impact on people?
I'm hopeful it's helpful. I keep thinking, oh my gosh, I wrote this book where I told everything. And I was like, does this make me like unfriendable and unemployable and, you know, all those things. And so I hope it connects with people. I have a public Twitter account. So it's Laura F. Trujillo. I have a webpage that isn't very great. That's lauratrujillo.org. I guess those are the best ways if anyone wants to reach out. I have felt very fortunate of just strangers who have reached out when I've written about suicide in the past, and just being able to connect with strangers.
Well, Laura, you're really doing great work, and I know this is going to help other people. And the fact that you are so open about it, and you know, you've bared all of your soul in the book,
it makes people feel like they can bear theirs.
Yeah,
kind of gives them permission.
Exactly. So we really applaud you for what you're doing, and hope that the book reaches a lot of people.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for just making time and caring about the issue. I really, really appreciate that.
Again, our thanks to Laura Trujillo. Her new book is called Stepping Back from the Ledge, A Daughter's Search for Truth and Renewal. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.